Blog Talk Radio.
In the beginning was the beat, and the beat was the rhythm of God, and the rhythm of God is the harmony of humanity, and where there is harmony, there is peace.
Once again, family, we welcome you to the call. I am Brother Thurman. I'm a board member with Us Lifting Us. And tonight we're going to explore a number of things about Us Lifting Us as well as the topic for the beginning part of this evening. And the question is the quest for reparations compatible with black economic empowerment? Is the quest for reparations compatible with black economic empowerment? Invite you to join the discussion as we explore this and other questions and vital information about Us Lifting Us. And so, once again, welcome you. We're here every Thursday and with the Dare to Win program. I am Brother Thurman, a member of Us Lifting Us. You can participate by calling 929-477-2789, 929-477-2789. Press 1 whenever you have a question or a comment. And anyone that's, that wants to listen to the call online, you can just go to Us Lifting Us, www.usliftingus.com. And when you get to the web site, just look for the radio tab. And click on Listen Live, and you would be able to be tuned right into the program by way of Internet. This evening, our guest is Brother Shabaka. Brother Shabaka, welcome to the program. He's a ULU board member, and how are you? And give some words to the audience.
Well, good evening to you, Brother Thurman, and thank you for this opportunity to talk. I'd like to greet the family, wish them well, and appreciate their participation, you know, on this evening program.
Good, good. Thank you so much. And family, we're going to move forward once again with our question for the first part of the evening. Is the quest for reparations compatible with black economic empowerment? Is the quest for reparations compatible with black economic empowerment? Brother Shabaka, please tell us, give us your input about that question.
Well, thank you very much, brother, for giving me the opportunity to speak to that question. And let me state categorically that I'm not a historian on the reparation, the African reparation movement, but I have been involved with that movement, and I will share, you know, some information, and particularly in addressing the question that you asked. I think I can start by first defining at least what reparation is, at least as we in the movement defined it. And we defined it this way. First, reparation is a process of repairing. As you can tell, it's the root word of reparations, repairing, healing and restoring people injured because of a group identity and who have suffered injury as a result of that group identity and in violation of their fundamental human rights by a government or governments, corporations, institutions, large families, etc. Those groups have been injured and have the right to obtain from the governments, the corporations, the institutions, or the families responsible for that injuries, which they need to repair themselves, to heal themselves, and make themselves whole. So what I'm saying is that the injury was so inflammable to them that it sort of like tore them apart, all right? And now what is needed is the resources necessary to bring that part back together, and we can do that because we've seen it happen over time. In addition to being a demand for justice, it is a principle of international human law. As a remedy, it is similar to the remedies for damages in domestic lawsuits that hold a person responsible for injuries suffered by another when infliction of injury violates domestic law. And we've seen this all the time, lawsuits, particularly in this country, because we're privy to this country, a number of lawsuits. But examples of groups that have obtained reparations on a larger scale, well, we can think of the Jewish victims from the Holocaust caused by the Nazis, the Japanese Americans during the same period of time who were interned in concentration camps during World War II, African natives, Eskimos for land, labor, and resources taken when it was, and the victims of, you know, Rosewood, Florida, which is very much related to our people, so-called Native Americans, as they receive remedies as a consequence of the violation of treaties. And we could go on with dissidents in Argentina and other places, as well as their descendants. Now, when we speak particularly about reparations, I'm associating it with Africans. And so now, using that broad definition that and description that I cited earlier, I am applying that African reparations is a process of repairing, healing, and restoring African peoples injured because of their particular group identity and in violation of their fundamental human rights by governments such as the European powers involved in the enslavement of Africans, the Arabs, and the Persians, to name a few, involved in the East African slave trade, and then any business establishment, institutions like the Jesuits, all right, families, equally involved. So we as Africans are not asking for any more than what the Jewish people, the so-called Native American, the Eskimos, political dissidents have asked for in this contemporary time. Included in that definition, of course, are the monies, wealth, stolen as a consequence of the enslavement of Africans during this slavery period, and the exploitation of labor and resources, particularly when we had land, when we had resources in the U.S., on the continent, et cetera, in post-enslavement and the colonial periods. Essentially, brother, we have been robbed. As a people, we have been robbed and subjugated to the most inhumane treatment ever experienced by the people in order to keep being robbed. So we were human beings reduced to poverty, even a concept, when you think about it, that's very alien to a lot of cultures throughout the world, treating human beings as property, chattel slave. Now, not to go in too much depth, but some organizations involved in reparations may base their claim based on their understanding of the different migrations of Africans to the West. And let me just say a few words. That most of us think of the migration of Africans to the West as forced migrations during the period of the transatlantic slave trade, which we sometimes call Maafa. All right. And that is from the attacks in Central and Western Africa, the Trail of Tears. I mean, not the Trail of Tears, but the Middle Passage to the coast in the ships, brought from the ships to the Caribbean, to Central and South America, then to the U.S. We usually think of that as the migration of Africans, and that might have been a large part and maybe the majority of migrations of Africans who come here. But we know from studies, particularly Van Sertima, also from the African Moors, that they had expeditions to this country prior to Columbus. And some of them fought the Europeans when they came here. All right, so some people base their claim, you know, on the migratory periods and what they themselves have a belief in. But what is necessarily important, all of them see that after European claim, didn't care what migrational paradigm you came from, he enslaved you. If you look like you came from a dark-complected race on the African continent, you were enslaved. And as a consequence of that, you were brutalized in order to maintain that system of slavery, and you were tortured. All right. And in order to create an atmosphere of intimidation and fear in order to keep you enslaved and to prevent you from coming advantageous to rebel against that slavery. So he doesn't want that slavery to happen. Now, as we move on to the period after slavery, the post-slavery period, there were a number of things that associated with us that is very much associated with reparations. The first thing that comes to mind from my research is the during the Civil War, right after the Civil War, the Sherman Special Field Order number 15, which came out in January 16, 1885 by General William T. Sherman. He was commander of the Military Division of Mississippi for the U.S. Army. That order provided for the confiscation of 400,000 acres of land along the Atlantic coast from South Carolina, Georgia, and Florida. That land represents the area that we know as the Gullah Geechee area on the eastern seaboard from South Carolina all the way down to around Jacksonville in northern Florida. In fact, my ancestors are Gullah Geechee, or Geechees. So that was, Sherman had basically promised people, Africans, who were following him during his move to the sea. He was stationed in Atlanta and then came down to Savannah. And then he promised those people who followed him, that's our ancestors, that they would have that plot of land. And so that was, I guess you would call, the first real appearance of reparation that was offered. But unfortunately, President Andrew Johnson, after Lincoln was assassinated, issued a proclamation that returned that land that had been partialed out to Africans back to the southern owners if they took a loyalty pledge. Now, that's really significant because out of that out of that experience, we generally hear, you know, 40 acres and a mule. It was also, according to Dr. Claude Anderson, that it was not only 40 acres and a mule, but it was also $100 that was promised. And then it was reneged. And, of course, we know the aftermath of that, Jim Crow and a whole bunch of other things. But let me stop here just in case you have any other questions you'd like to have directed towards that. But that was the first experience of what I would call in the modern era, you know, post-slavery, of an attempt for reparations. Of course, there are many signs of reparations up to the present time.
Yes, I agree, brother. Vital information that many of us are not aware of and aware of why it's something that we are deserving of, considering many, many factors that you've already mentioned and more. Family members, listening audience, we want to thank you for being in the audience, and hopefully you're taking notes on this subject about reparations. It's a very serious matter that we must put some focus on and have some clarity. And Brother Shabaka, we thank you so much for what you're bringing to us tonight on that subject. And family members, if you got any questions concerning the subject of reparations, you can call us at 929-477-2789. And when you're ready with questions or comments, you just one on the phone, and it would put you in the queue, and we would get to you and put you on the air. And so,
Brother Thurman, let me add one other thing that I think is important, because it's always been a question of since that period of time whether Africans who have been brought here, kidnapped here, want to integrate into the system, or you know, separate, create our own. Move towards self-determination, repatriate, a whole bunch of other stuff. But Sherman made that suggestion in 1865 after he met with 20 ministers in Savannah. And this is crucial. He met with 20 ministers, African ministers, in Savannah. And he basically asked them what did they want, and they told him they wanted land to do for themselves. And he raised the question to them. Well, in wanting land, do you want land to be part of the U.S.? 19 of the 20 ministers said no. They wanted their own land, and which is why he gave them that strip. That strip was all connected. That strip, all right, like I said, which is the Gullah Geechee area, all right? He gave them that strip, you know, because they in turn said, no, we don't want to be integrated, except for one. And he was part of the Freedmen Movement. All right, but the rest of them said, no parts. We want our own land. We want to be repaired ourselves. We want the right to work. And as I said, Claude Anderson includes $100, which was basically the currency needed in order to buy the necessary tools, all right, that would be used in order to work that land. All right, that's all I wanted to add, brother.
Oh, good. Good point. Good point. I'm glad you brought up that the ministers and what they wanted. Family members, we're going to take a quick break, and we will be right back with you. Family, we welcome you back to the call. We want to continue with the conversation tonight. And if you've got questions, make sure you call us at 929-477-8992747-2789. Press 1. Ready to speak, or you got a comment. At this first part of the hour, we are talking about reparations, something that we really, really need to be aware of, and what the reasons and what we can stand to benefit, and we need to take everything, every step that we can to position ourselves to be economically empowered and empowered in all areas that's vital to our lives. Brother Shabaka, getting back to the conversation about and continuing about the reparations, there are those who say that reparations sounds a lot like affirmative action, which appeared to have benefited white women more than Africans. How do you feel about that?
Brother, I'm so glad that you brought that up, reparations and affirmative action. You know, the in fact, the first movement towards affirmative action was a reparations move. All right, equal accommodation back there in the 50s and 60s, and then, you know, white folks defined it, oh, you want to sit next to us. No, we didn't want to go all the way across town to buy a hamburger if we were hungry. We didn't need to go all the way home if we needed to use the bathroom. And so we were, you know, and our taxes, all right, was contributing, all right, to the city that we lived in. And so we didn't see why we had this disparity, particularly if the establishment was benefiting off of that in the form of a taxation that there was that we were subjected to. No. So as long as the Europeans are able to define your movements and then control the narrative, they can make it what they want and give a different interpretation and appeal to it. This is Webster, and this is the federal government. This is how they define affirmative action. Affirmative action is defined as effort to improve the employment or educational opportunities of members of minority groups and women. Let me state that again. Affirmative action is defined as an active effort to improve the employment or educational opportunities of members of minority groups and women. That's Webster. You notice how they define the words and include the words minority groups and women. Now, when I earlier explained and described what reparations was, I was very precise. Reparation is a process of repairing and healing and restoring of people injured because of their group identity. I didn't say anything about getting a job. You know, I didn't say anything about getting education. All right, and in violation of their fundamental human rights by government, corporations, institutions, and large families. That's reparation. That don't have anything to do with what the government had redefined as affirmative action. All right. I'm focused on African people. We need to be repaired because of what the imposition of the system of slavery, how it affected us, separating us from our mothers, forbidding us to use our drums, forbidding us to talk our language, forbidding us to have our forms of spirituality and organize. This is what I'm talking about, that which makes a people with his culture whole. In fact, in COBRA, the National Coalition of Blacks for Reparations in America, has identified several areas in which African people, at least in this country, have been injured. But we can really generalize that. Peoplehood and nationhood. This is the first injury. Peoplehood and nationhood. The destruction of African people's culture. The destruction. It was deliberate. All right. And the infringement of the larger culture upon black people of African descent in the United States and, of course, otherwheres and the prior colonies. That's deliberate, the destruction of that. I can't enslave you if you still maintain your language, your culture, your gods. I can't enslave you. It's difficult. Education is the other area that we say we've been injured. And Cobra says they've been injured. The denial of the right to an education particularly started in the slavery when criminal sanction was imposed on people who, of our enslaved ancestors who learned, and then the miseducation we received post-slavery period. Health. African people are subject to torturous, even today. They don't call it that, but that's what it is. Health experiments. We all remember the publicized Tuskegee syphilis experiment and the denial of quality health care during and post-slavery to the present time. Criminal punishment, criminal justice. I don't need to say no more about that. Cops shooting you in the back. The enslavement of African peoples necessitated the development of a dual punishment system that continues to exist in the U.S. today. This dual system punishes black people of African descent more harshly than it does the Caucasian or European. And, of course, that which is of particular interest to Ulu and people in the black empowerment movement, wealth and poverty. The wealth gap between black people of African descent and the Caucasian Europeans created during the slave period has been sustained. Confiscation of land and other forms of wealth continue up to the present day. Black people of African descent were forced into poverty through enslavement, Jim Crow, the continuation of discrimination of employment, housing, and other economic areas that we are experiencing today. That has been proved to be internationally illegal. Out of the 2001 World Conference Against Racism in Durban, South Africa, they declared that slavery was a crime against humanity. All right, it was a crime against humanity, and then they advanced the notion that reparations was a legitimate remedy to such racial crimes. It further stated to realize full reparation that there must be, one, a cessation and guarantee of non-repetition of the criminal and discriminatory practices. In other words, you must stop. Now, I said all this stuff has been going on up to the present time and continue. As I'm speaking to you right now, some black person is being abused by the system. So there's been no cessation. All right, international law says there should be. It should stop. Secondly, restitution for stolen land as well as intellectual property. That's our wealth. They stole that. That's what Claude Anderson says. As a result of the stealing of that, it has set us back, you know, not 100 yards, 200 yards, you know, but hundreds of years as a consequence of what they stole to advance themselves. Compensation for inherited injuries and the theft of inheritance. Again, stealing our wealth. Fourth, satisfaction and acknowledgement of the right to self-determination. If I'm tired and I say I want to leave, create my own, I have that right according to international law. If I want to repatriate back to Africa, I have that right under international law. And, of course, rehabilitation. That's important because a lot of us were psychologically injured and still psychologically injured, you know, post-traumatic slavery syndrome, you know, all those syndromes that comes up because there has not been any cessation of the hostility towards it. So when we look at these bullet points, what Ankobra found as injuries to African people, the international community has identified remedies for these injuries, as I just cited 1 through 5. Brother, let me stop here in case you might have a caller that might be listening and want to have a question, or you might want to have a follow-up question.
Callers, family, anyone that's got questions or comments, certainly we want you to be involved because this is very vital, very, very vital. And we do have a caller, and a caller with the last four numbers, 6093. Welcome to the call, and give us your name and tell us where you're calling from.
Yes, greetings, greetings. This is Nanana, and I am calling from Denver, Colorado. How are you all doing?
Greetings, good. Sister Nanana. Glad to have you.
All right. Thank you. Yeah, I actually have two questions, and so I'll ask both of them, and then maybe you can answer. The first question that I have is, up to this point, and please correct me if I'm wrong, up to this point in COBRA and perhaps other organizations who have sought reparations, particularly here in the continental U.S. for people of Black African descent, those organizations have yet to be successful in getting reparations. And so I'd like to know your take on why it is that there hasn't been success in achieving that up to this point. That's one question. And then my other question is concerning genocide, which I believe is a under international law has a specific legal definition and is a legal term. And I'm wondering, in all of the definitions that you've given and the explanation that you've provided, I haven't heard the word genocide. And I'm wondering, does that apply? And if not, why isn't genocide applicable for achieving reparations? So those are my two questions. And thank you for the opportunity.
Yes, thank you, sister. I really appreciate that. And let me take your second question first. Yes, genocide is included. I didn't mention it. All right, but it is included. And even what I did mention, there is no statute. When I said racism and all the harms that it's created, there is no statute of limitation. So you can bring up charges, and a number of attempts to bring up charges against the U.S. and European powers to the international world court. All right. One case in particular that I am quite aware of is the case of the over Herero people in Namibia, who is bringing up a genocide case and an ethnic cleansing case against the Germans during their occupation and colonialism in what was called at that time Southwest Africa, and who later, it was occupied by South Africa. All right, and this goes back to World War One, prior to World War One, and so they're trying to negotiate with the Germans, and they've been trying to take to the world court what the Germans did. In addition to that, the a group of countries in the Caribbean have formed a CARICOM commission. I guess they formed a commission to bring charges against the British, particularly the English-speaking countries, all right, who formed the Reparations Commission to bring charges against the British, all right, for some of the things that they've done to what was called the indigenous people prior to the enslavement period. And so they brought them all together because they're all one people now, genocide, and created that. But these are done. Now, you've asked about the reason why. this goes up to your first question. All right. But, yeah, genocide is included. All forms of hostility that has been affected, that have affected African peoples is included in this, and even in COBRA. Even though it's more on the legislative position and the legal position, is now contemplating moving outside of continental United States and are trying to get sympathetic countries to begin to help it bring a case against the United States. All right, for not only the genocide, because you got to remember, keep this in mind, in the South, Africans were the primary laborers necessary, all right, for the production, tobacco, cotton, sugar, and what have you. All right, and you had a few European indentured servants, and then you had the landowners. So that meant that the predominant population in southern states were Africans. All right, so we know that the hostility directed towards Africans after the Civil War caused the migration, but they also got murdered. You know, nobody speaks of that. Well, because the victor, you know, writes his own history. You know, so there's a case of racism, of genocide that we need to also flush out. But nobody likes to speak about that. So I'm saying all that to say, yes, sister, that what you ask is there. Now, one, the Reparations Commission movement, which has many faces, all right, and they argue among themselves, all right, but they agree the hostility, there needs to be a cessation of hostility, and then we need to sit down and talk about what you stole. All right. They're coming together on this. But just like you had the COINTELPRO, you know, activities in the 60s and 70s, you've had similar kinds of thing that has disrailed the reparation movement, all right, but it's gaining steam. The other thing, which is I'm glad you raised the question, because we have to keep abreast of these activities and strategies that Europeans are using. We need money. The reparation movement need money in order to bring, just to bring about the lawsuits. In other words, to do the research, then bring it before hostile courts. It needs law. It needs lawyers. The lawyers have to be paid, all right? And so there is a problem in terms of the economics associated with this movement. And right now we have not gained and delivered on providing the resources necessary to sustain a long battle, because this cracker, you know, is not attempting to give up anything. All right. But we have won what we call very light victories. And when the light victories, I'm saying, you know, apologies. We have some slavery disclosure laws that mean that any corporation that has its ancestry with in slavery, you know, it has to disclose that. And then folks in that position where they are operating, you know, have to say, well, as a consequence of what we did, we will negotiate how we will, you know, make reparations, or how we will somehow compensate you for what our foreparents did, corporations that was involved. And that includes the insurance company that insured the slips, the ships, the slaves, the plantation, everything. They all involved. They got rich, and they became the corporations, a lot of the corporations that we see now. So we haven't had the resources. We've had internal fights among ourselves, just like the nationalist movement have had internal fights among itself. All right, and we've been sieged, you know, just like J. Edgar Hoover did to Garvey during that time, the infiltration of the Nation of Islam at that time. And we've had those setbacks, but we are still moving. And right now, and I see a very good opportunity, because the association of the nationalist movement, and part of that nationalist Pan-Africanist movement, is the reparation movement, because the reparation movement attempts to get what was stolen. The nationalist movement attempted to get the resources that were now, as a consequence of what was stolen, we've still been able to produce, all right, and then utilize that in order to free ourselves from the shackles of the Western imperialistic system. Sister, I hope that answered in about, but, you know, I can, you know, at some time, you know, we can communicate, because to deal with a full program on reparations would take hours. We would have to deal with its history. We have to deal with its successes. We have to deal with the infiltration. And, of course, the Europeans will throw money. That's the greatest fear that I have. At least when we have the Black Power movement, we're looking for resources coming in from our people. But, see, the reparations, you got white folks saying that they are reparationists. I mean, it's a joke. White folks says, I've seen the light. I'm a reparationist. And I'm trying to explain to my brothers and sisters, these same folks that say they this are the same people who are moving you out of your homes, what I call ethnic cleansing. the nice clean word is gentrification. All right, ethnic cleansing. It's not the redneck that's want to live in your house. It's the liberals. It's those folks who like to have wine and coffee, you know, on the side of the road or whatever it is. They are the ones who are infiltrating and giving this humane face about assistance. This is this to me is the greatest threat. I hope that answered a little bit, but I'm willing to, you know, give you my email address to go any further with it.
All right, Brother Shabaka, so much powerful information, and we should most certainly be taking notes as the various subject as we said. When we return, we will ask Brother Shabaka, how does the reparations movement tie into black economic empowerment? Be back time. Welcome back, family. Brother Shabaka, I want to continue on. The question is, how does reparations tie into the black economic empowerment, and in particular, the Ulu deal and plan?
Thank you, brother. It's my pleasure to try to make an attempt to tie the two together. As I may have stated earlier, what reparations attempt to do is to retrieve what has been stolen. In other words, we worked the fields, all right, and most of the wealth went to the Europeans who invested it in other things. The only thing that we got were clothes and, you know, some chitlins to keep us going to work another day for the Europeans at sunrise. All right. So we didn't get very much as a result of what our labor created. Rehabilitation is one of the things that we're asking for, but in particular, all right, we're asking for the wealth that was stolen, that was transferred, hidden, and then generationally inherited among Europeans. And why do I speak so much of this? This becomes important because on the reparation side, it's the retrieval of what was stolen, and then getting sufficient resources to help repeal ourselves so that we can create the economy once we retrieve, you know, a lot of what was stolen. All right. Now, in spite of what we experienced, we know we were stolen. We know how we were treated. We've been thrown in jail, poor. You look at the so-called hood, the ghetto experience, you say we are a depressed people. But at the same time, Africans in the United States spent in 2017 $1.3 trillion. Let me say that again. Africans in this country in 2017 spent around $1.3 trillion. Now, let me give you some context. Mexico has a gross domestic product, which is their goods and services and what they trade among themselves and then what they export, the surplus that they export and the money they make from that surplus. They had a gross domestic product of $1.15 trillion in the same period. With a population of 129 million, we had about 40 million people, or 42 at the max. All right. Now, we, $1.3 trillion, would make us the 13th largest economy in the world, because Mexico was at that time the 13th largest economy in the world. And this is out of, you know, the United Nations or 200 nations. we would be the 13th United States, black folks. But unfortunately, that amount of money that we spend, 95% of it goes to non-African communities. And the 5% that comes back is only enabling us to spend another 95% that goes back to them. All right, so we're trying to retrieve, the reparation movement's trying to retrieve what has been stolen from the exploitation. Now, when we take a look at the Black Economic Empowerment System, particularly our cooperative economic system, what we attempt to do is to use group economics, pooling our resources to capture a significant portion, if we can, of that $1.3 trillion. Now, this is not talking about what the white man stole. This is talking about what we've been able to capture, all right, and spend, but unfortunately, the money is not managed. All right, it goes right back out almost instantaneously to the white areas, the white community, and a few Asians, you know, Koreans, Chinese, what have you. So what we're trying to do is the movement is trying to capture this, to better manage it so that it can use those resources, all right, to build up our communities. All right, reparations movement attempt to capture what was stolen, and we attempt to capture what we've been able to generate, all right, and then use that to build our communities. All right, so while the Black Economic Empowerment Movement, if successful, all right, and able to capture a significant quantity of the of that $1 trillion plus that we spend, then more money can be given, as I said earlier, to movements like the reparation movements, all right? And if the reparation movement, all right, is able to retrieve significant portions of what was stolen, then they, in turn, could fuel the Black Economic Empowerment Movement because there would be more money coming in. So their attempt is, so you got two sides of the same coin. The coin, you know, is the harm and what was had, what we are able to spend, and then what was taken and consequently stolen. And we know from our history that a number of communities have survived, all right, and a number of communities, once they survive and drive, and then, of course, the European community came in and crushed them, all right, and then stole what they were able to do. So the reparation movement needs funds. Funds generated by the Black economic community can assist them, all right? Funds that might be gathered from the reparation movement can supply and fuel the economy that Black empowerment, and particularly ULU with his plan, is trying to achieve. So now when we take a look specifically at ULU, well, ULU has put his plan out there to pool our resources and to use these resources to collect and set up businesses, and then to use our business to employ members of our community, make a profit, and distribute. Now, some of the profit or the that we achieve or surplus that we achieve, a portion of that we know, based on our ULU formula, goes to charities. Well, we can probably build in something that goes to these movements, all right, because these movements are attempting to get the resources and wealth that has been stolen. All right, we're not trying to necessarily get what was stolen. We're trying to capture what we have been able to get as a consequence of our energy and our intellectual capabilities to cipher off some of the stuff that we get by work and savings and what have you. It's just that we're spending it, and we don't have enough businesses where our people spend them with ourselves that we can in turn redirect back into our communities. So that's the one tie that I see, is that the reparation movement attempt to get what was stolen and the resources necessary to help repair our folks, and movements like what ULU is involved in attempt to retain the resources that we have gathered, but that we, because of poor management, doesn't stay in our community long to create an economy that would be beneficial to us. Brother, I hope that I at least tapped on it a little bit. Please follow up if you got some others.
Absolutely, brother. And as you said, you know, there's volumes and volumes of information, but this is a very vital subject. Brother Shabaka, so what you have told us, you know, just in the last few minutes, that definitely helps a lot. And before we move any further, I do want to check in with a caller that's on the line. Caller that's got the telephone number 4457. We're into the last few minutes of the hour, 4457. Please give us your name and tell us what you're calling from and give us some brief comments or questions.
Yes, thank you. Greeting, family. This is Abby O'Doon in New York. It's a very good show tonight.
Greeting, brother.
Thank you. It's really dovetails with the conversation we had a few days ago concerning the Chinese. And if you notice that they didn't reach where they reached overnight, they've been in the field, so to speak, since the early 1900s, probably around 1920. And they didn't really gather up a real windstorm until circumstances after the end of World War II. And they're basically in one area. Here we are scattered all over the globe, and we're suffering from various kinds of mental hygiene issues. So you first have to get the people's attention. And perhaps in that regard, we need to be planning on developing cores of high school students and post-high school graduates to begin to focus in these areas and use some of the funding that we're able to get from other churches and other what have yous to travel, to see how we live elsewhere on the planet, to make common cause with those brothers, and the things that are going on at the UN and the court of that you just referred to about a criminal what do you call it?
International court.
Yeah, the international court. And then having done all that, maybe we can recruit teachers or educators from the main sororities and fraternities to help educate these children in a way that doesn't waste time as to who we are. Everybody's too caught up on the simplistic stuff that's used to dangle in our face to entertain us for a minute because they get us all scared about dying. If you want to cure our mental hygiene issues, you have to. One of the first things that have to be done is to get young people to have a sense of purpose. What better sense of purpose is it for us to restore our majesty in light of the rest of humanity? So that's about all I had to say in this brief time. Thank you very much.
Yes, and thank you so much, brother, for calling in and giving that good information. Brother Shabaka, we've got a few minutes in the hour. Did you want to add some other closing statements that connects with Ulu and the movement for reparations and Ulu cooperative model, how that's connected and what can do to better serve our people?
Well, Ulu has a model and plan that helps to, acquire a lot of the we're trying to put this into force right now, and a lot of the stuff that we waste, we want to be able to capture some of that and manage that. And as I said earlier, pool our resources. You have to be conscious to pool our resources, and then identify what those business opportunities that would be there, which could be successful, and therefore become profitable. Once they become profitable, then we can reinvest some of the profit, you know, into expanding those businesses, developing those businesses, as well as paying the workers and, of course, the members who contribute to those businesses. But to get back a little bit to the reparations movement, NCOBRA is a member of ULU. All right? NCOBRA, a reparations organization, is a member of the co-op, okay? Now, I think that kind of dialogue and interaction and relationship has to establish. Now, why do I say that? What the reparations are trying to do is to create a commission. All right, become solid in their determination on that commission. As it begins to demand, all right, from the oppressor, all right, its demands, the retrieval of these money, the retrieval of resources necessary, all right, to make us whole. Now, we need to, if we get that, not if, when we get that, what are we going to do with these resources? What are we going to do with this wealth we've been able to negotiate and retrieve? Well, this is where ULU, because it has an economic model, all right, and because of it,
has to be somehow part of ENCOBRA or part of the reparation movement. You have to have your voice in there. For an example, in ENCOBRA, a national organization, and ULU can be said it's a business, but it is an organization business. You know, it's national, it's international. You get three votes on the board. You get three votes on the board as a national entity, all right? So you got three voices, essentially, to say how you think the reparation movement should be moving in terms of capturing the wealth that was stolen and then how it needs to be distributed. So I'm saying this to say that we need to be talking to each other, you know, not doing our separate things. We need to know what everybody else is doing because the white boy is there with his resources. And he's trying to infiltrate. He's trying to put this human face that's white in the reparation movement. And I'm not kidding. And there's some folks that are going for it. They might jump on me now if they're listening right now because they know how I feel about it. But I'm saying we need, because the white boy has his money. All right, a lot of our businesses are not putting any money into the reparation effort and not in getting involved in the reparation effort so that if they're successful, they can in turn direct how that economy is going to be governed, which benefits our people. So that becomes important. So if you have interest in ULU, all right, then what you should do is go to our website and become a member. And then while you're in ULU, you know, develop the strategy that expands our ability to gather resources. Use your intellect, your knowledge of the environment that you live in to see what might be a successful business. Work that through with others. Tell the leadership, which would be the board in this case, of your position. Send us a proposal, and then we in turn will put a stamp of approval on, because after our investigation we see that it's a strong possibility that it works, all right, and therefore will be successful. And if it's successful, we're all successful. Remember now, we're members, but we're members owners. Go to the website. Please look at the videos. Read the literature that we have. Membership is $50. To be a member, that's all you need, is $50. And only members can acquire the necessary shares or units, as we call them. In the LLC, they call units. Shares, you know, when you know, in a corporation, all right, necessary to be able to earn profits as a consequence, I mean to earn dividends as a consequence of profits that may be made. So, brother, I won't say any more on that, but I would like to thank the audience for giving me an opportunity to talk about and attempt to see how these two, what appear two different movements, but they all part of the same movement. It's just that one looks at it one way, and on the flip side, the other one looks at it somewhat closer to the people, all right? And I'd like to thank the audience and the questions that have come in. I'd like to thank ULU for this radio program and give me an opportunity to talk, and you in particular for the kindness that you've shown and the questions that you've asked, which allowed me to explore. So thanks a lot, brother.
Yes, brother Shabaka, thank you so much. And once again, family, please, we definitely want you to take note of what's been said today. It's a very serious matter, and there is a strong connection, and there's a need for the work that ENCOBRA's been doing over the years, and there's also a need for what Us Lifting Us is doing, and we need to be connected with each other, know what's going on, and those monies from reparations, it needs to be directed appropriately, as Brother Shabaka mentioned earlier. And ULU, help us. If you're not a member, help us. Go to the website, uslifting.us.com, uslifting.us.com, and make sure that you take a very good look at the videos that's on the right-hand side and go through the online presentation, and you can apply for membership. You apply. It's not automatic. And it's very vital that we join hands, because we are under attack. From the first time the invaders came, they never have ever stopped attacking us, and we all know that, regardless of your age, and we should know that. And it's vital that we band together, pool our resources, and Us Lifting Us is very unique in that we are talking about and we have the model in place of pooling our resources using the cooperative model, which is not something recent, something that our ancient ancestors in used very effectively for many, many purposes, building economics, building communities, farming and agriculture and all of those kind of things. And us lifting us up to this point of the sisters and brothers, you know, that's across the U.S., in Africa, in Europe, in Asia, and South America, Caribbean, that have come together and pooled resources. We are building businesses, and we have a business in Atlanta, Georgia, called Cafe Ulu, and you can go to cafeulu.com and get more details about Cafe Ulu at cafeulu.com, and make sure you like that on the Facebook page. And we're going to use the resources that sisters and brothers that become members to build more and more businesses, and it's going to help to finance our liberation, help us to employ our people, help us to reduce unemployment amongst our people, help us to reduce crime and all of that by having prosperous communities and so much more. And also in this coming March, we're going to have the 2019 annual members meeting. It's very vital that you, if you're not a member, that you join, and so that you would be eligible to attend the 2019 annual members meeting that's going to be in Atlanta, Georgia. And all of the ones that are already members, we definitely want you to be there, and make sure that you just go to the, if you have not gone to the webpage, usliftingus.com, you can find more details about the 2019 annual members meeting and convention. And every Thursday we're here, and we're here as part of continuing education about Ulu and matters that pertain to our people. And we are the ones that can do it, and we're the only ones that's going to do it for us, and we got to be in charge of that. And we thank you so much for being here. We thank Brother Shabaka once again for all of the vital information that he's brought. Everybody that's on the line, that's taking notes, and the ones that called in, and we'll be back here next Thursday to give more continuing education about the necessity of us pooling our resources with Ulu, with the cooperative model, not the brutal capitalistic model, and how we can build businesses and leave legacies for many, many generations for the babies of the future. We'll be back next Thursday. Thank you so much. Make sure you spread the word to all of your family and visit the cafeulu.com website and like Cafe Ulu and also Us Lifting Us on Facebook. We'll talk to you next Thursday. Usliftingus.com.
Every voice and say,
we are going to make it all through.
We are going to make it all through.